The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I came down here this evening with the idea of giving a talk on desire. And I think I still want to do that, but I keep an eye on how many people come with the hope that someday there won't be so many people, so that we could do something different than just me, you know, being up here holding forth. And so what I thought we would do is, I'll try to make my thoughts about desire somewhat short, and then give you a chance to engage in this topic a little bit on your own, because desire is central to human life. And everyone has a relationship to their desires, or many different kinds of relationships. And so what is your relationship, and what's the wise way of being with desire? Desire is so central to human life that probably whoever made up the expression human being would have been better off having said human desirelings, because desire kind of runs the show. And philosophers and religious teachers down through the ages have given a lot of teachings about desire, because the desire is so important, is so central. And since it's such a big deal in everyone's lives, most people have some relationship, either conscious or unconscious, either thought out or just not thought out, some relationship to desire. Most human beings at some point or other are deeply moved by their desires. Some people are deeply troubled by their desires. And so coming to some understanding of desire is something that many people have. Because it's so central, people will often go to people they think are wise about their ideas about desire. And so for some people, they come to Buddhism for it. And then the teachings on Buddhism are a little bit not so obvious to get, partly because of the way that's popular presented. There's a lot of misunderstanding about what Buddhism has to say about desire. One of the common misunderstandings is that somehow the point of Buddhism is to get rid of all your desires and not have any desire, in which case you'd probably successfully be depressed. You know, I don't know, you know, how useful it is to just be completely free of all desires. And I think that what characterizes the Buddhist strategy for a wise life is to have a wise relationship to desire and to appreciate that desires are really important, and they're very powerful. And some of the most beautiful and valuable aspects of a human life comes through the vehicle, comes through the avenue of desires. And I think all of us here, my guess would be, have been the beneficiary of many people's desires. People have had desires for you. Imagine all of you have had teachers who have taught you in some way, and it's possible that you have one or two teachers from your lifetime who you feel very grateful for. You wouldn't be where you are in your life without somehow being supported or believed in or mentored by that teacher. And that teacher was someone who had a desire. Desire was to support you, help you, or mentor you. Most people have some relative, if not a parent, maybe an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent or someone who, people say, you know, who had a desire for your welfare, was generous to you, spent time with you, was concerned about your welfare. You were probably sick at some point as a child, and someone wanted to take care of you, and that their desire was very meaningful. One of the little meaningful kind of, little events that carried a big impact on my psyche somehow was, I don't know how old I was, but pretty young. I would go back to my grandparents' house, and I would sleep in the morning under the comforters, or stay in, and I would read Donald Duck magazines. And my grandmother would come carrying in a tray of toast with cheese and milk. And I would be there, and, you know, Donald Duck and comforter, and this, you know, I could still almost taste the cheese and the toast. But what was transmitted in that was her love and her care and her support for me. And it was, you know, had a, you know, such a small little thing, but, you know, it kind of you did, because the desire was maybe momentary happiness or maybe some misunderstanding or whatever. Somehow you act on a desire for revenge or desire to get back at someone, a desire for all kinds of things. So desires get in the way as well. So when you go back and look at the teachings of the Buddha to see how he relates to desires, there was no categorical approach. Desires are bad or desires are good. Let's celebrate desires, let's squash desires. But rather, the idea is to look more carefully at desire, and then as we look at desire, to evaluate, is this desire wise or is it not wise? Is a desire helpful or is it not helpful? So sometimes people, this power of desire is such that there's a compulsion, a drive that says, I want it and I want it now. And so there is not that reflection that questions and wonders, is this helpful, this desire? Is it useful for this? Is it timely? Is it helpful or not, this desire that I have? So the Buddhist approach would be to be mindful, be attentive, and reflective. And when there's a desire, to ask the question, is this helpful or is this not helpful? With the idea that you would have some basis to understand whether it's helpful or not helpful. And so it takes a little bit of, you know, it can become second nature, this kind of thinking, but it takes some reflection, it takes some presence, and it takes some ability to be independent enough of your impulses, your desires, to, in a sense, step back and question them and look at them and understand them, rather than being driven by them and think about it afterwards. And that's one of the values of something like meditation or mindfulness, is that it gives you the ability not to act on every impulse you have, but rather to be present for it so you have some more choice of what you do. And so when we stop to look at desire and kind of evaluate what it is, there's a number of different ways to evaluate. One way is to evaluate the consequence of the desire. I can have the desire for, you know, seconds or thirds or fourth helpings of dinner because it was really good, I want more pleasure. And if I act on that desire without any reflection at all, I will suffer the consequences for the rest of the evening. But I've overeaten enough in my life that if I feel the desire for more food and I think, you know, oh, I realize, oh, the consequence, if I eat a seconds or thirds of this, I'm going to come down to IMC and fall asleep when I meditate, or I'm going to feel really awful, you know, for a long time, stuffed. And so, you know, it's a simple thing, but there's an understanding of consequences, so I'm not going to do that. If some of you acted on all your desires in relationship to other people, I don't know if they'd be very welcoming of that. You know, we can have all kinds of desires. And so we think, you know, mostly we are pretty well behaved. And so to look at the consequences. And then what consequences are we looking at? Are we looking at the consequences for ourselves? Or are we looking at the consequences for others, or for both? From the Buddhist approach, from the time of the Buddha, was to evaluate based on what is beneficial for oneself, what is beneficial for both, and then the Buddha uses this phrase, and what's beneficial for both self and others. It's not what's beneficial for others and not yourself. It's not what's beneficial for yourself and not for others. But it's really take everyone into account. What's the greater good for everyone? And so there's sometimes it takes a lot of reflection and consideration. It's not just about being in the moment and just trusting the natural impulses of the moment or what's going to happen, but it takes some consideration of the wider impact of our actions. So that's one area of exploration. Another is to look at desire, to evaluate, to understand what it is, and to understand that desires are layered. that a desire is desire is kind of a generic term, but if we take desire to be a surface want, the final desire or want impulse that gets us to act on something or almost get us to act, one of the really interesting questions around desire is for what purpose is the desire? What motivates the desire? So, you know, I could, for example, have a desire to eat, and on the surface it looks like I just want that delicious cake. But for what purpose do I want to eat the cake, more than just the pleasure of the cake? I might be feeling somewhat lonely or depressed, and I want pleasure to soothe myself. And so the motivation for that desire for the cake is not only for the cake, but the motivation is to be soothed by the cake. So many times what we think of as a desire is really the surface of some deeper motivations, intentions, aspirations that we have. And so part of what we do in mindfulness practice is to sit still enough so we can begin understanding, investigating what's underneath the surface of it. Not so much by analysis, but almost by feeling our way in, being still enough to listen more deeply. What else is going on here? And if we act on our desires too impulsively, then we're not going to take the time to listen more deeply to see what is there. Now here's what one of the things that's very interesting I found, is that it's possible to have desires which don't have good consequences. It's possible to have desires which have deeper motivations, which maybe are not so skillful or helpful. You know, so I might have a desire to tell a friend that, I don't know what, you know, he has nice clothes today. It's a nice thing. Maybe he has nice clothes. You know, maybe so it might seem like I just want to compliment my friend on the clothes. But really what I want to do is, you know, I'm going to ask him for money later on. So I'm preparing the ground for that later, asking for money. And so what's underneath my desire to tell the person that what's motivating me is to influence the person in a certain way, to have the person kindly disposed to me. But what's motivating me to want to influence the person is my greed, perhaps. Maybe I don't need the money, I just want greedy. And so there's greed. So there could be kind of unsavory motivations deep down inside, or there could be beautiful motivations. But what I found is if you stop and are still and listen to those very deeply, open to them, don't dismiss them, don't judge them in a moralistic way, that's wrong, it's bad, I have to not have those kinds of desires. But if you stop and listen and feel your way into it, make space for it, that a number of things can happen. One is that the desires begin to open up, or the layers begin to show themselves, and there's deeper and deeper layers. And some of the more unskillful desires that people have, even desires sometimes to hurt other people, if you go under the layers of it, sometimes you find that there's actually some beautiful or valuable desire or motivation deep down in the roots of it. So sometimes people hurt each other because they're just trying to be safe themselves. And wanting to be safe is a beautiful thing. Everyone wants to be safe. It's a good thing to be safe. It's just that it doesn't work really well to go and hit someone or go around hitting people and beating people up if you want to be safe. But people often, you know, in the heat of their anger, and, you know, they'll lash out in various ways. But if you don't lash out, but if you sit still and listen and listen and listen, be quiet and respect the desire. And respect, I like because it means to look again in Latin. But respect the desires and feel your way into it and don't act on it. Let it thaw a little bit. Let it soften a little bit. Let it open up a little bit and see what else is there. And what are the layers to it? And eventually you'll probably come to something that maybe is actually quite valuable or important to listen to and honor or respect. So, for example, the desire to be safe is something that should be listened to if you don't feel safe. And then you want to ask, you know, then you want to think, well, maybe the consequences of lashing out at this person doesn't really make me safe. Is there a better way, more useful way to do that? If you had cut out the desire, just ignored it or squashed it, and not taking the time to really open up to the desire and feel it in a deeper way, you wouldn't have felt the desire for safety or whatever else it might be deep down. There can be the desire for love. There can be desire for many beautiful things that sometimes lay at the bottom of some of the more unskillful and painful desires that people can have. So I see that what I found is that something like meditation practice or mindfulness practice is a very helpful process if you're interested in going through the layers. And so so you can't do that if you have kind of a policy of just let's jettison everything. Let's try to not have any desires at all. Good Buddhists don't have desires, so some people think. But what a good approach in Buddhism is to go look more deeply. And then one of the things that we can see when we look more deeply is, underneath, ask the question, for what purpose, what motivates this desire? We also start seeing some of the qualities of the deeper intention and motivation. Sometimes a deeper motivation intention is one of greed, sometimes one of generosity. Sometimes a deeper motivation is one of hostility. Sometimes it's one of love. Sometimes the deeper motivations are somehow caught up in confusion and bewilderment. And sometimes the deeper motivations are connected to clear seeing and wisdom. So what Buddhism says is that the quality of the deeper intention has a big impact on your future well-being. Because if you act on intentions that have greed or hostility or confusion as part of it, it conditions your mind in some way. It conditions the momentum of your psychic activity towards more greed, more hostility, and more confusion, and which is painful. If you act on deeper intentions of generosity and love and wisdom, it conditions the psychic stream to be more influenced by that, to be a more regular part of it. And so, which way do you want to condition your mind? Do you want to condition it by greed, or you want to condition it by generosity? You want to condition it by love or by hostility? And that's one of the teachings of Buddhism, which maybe is a little bit not so obviously empirical. It maybe takes a little bit on trust, you know, or faith from the tradition, that this idea that the quality of the intentions you act on are very meaningful for how it conditions your own future momentum of your mind and quality of your mind. And if you don't believe it, then what Buddhism kind of suggests is try it out as if it's true for a while and see if it makes a difference for you. So it's not a matter of whether desire is good or bad or right or wrong. Those are not interesting questions, that kind of abstract idea. The interesting question is the desires you have, are they helpful or not helpful? Are they helpful for the purpose that you want to live your life on? If what you want is to live a life that experiences peace, love, compassion, then are your desires in line with that? Do they support that? If what you want is a life that's supportive and helpful for the people around you, make a positive difference, are your desires helpful for that purpose or not? So part of the investigation of desire, from a kind of religious point of view of Buddhism, is it requires some deeper reflection on what is the purposes, the main purpose that you want your life to be about. And then from a sense of what that deeper purpose is and kind of being rooted in that, then you have a basis upon which to evaluate, is this desire helpful or not helpful for this purpose? That makes some sense? Is that enough sense? Did it give you something to think about? Good, I hope so. So now what I'd like to do is to break you up into little groups and for you to have a little discussion. We don't do it very often. Some people will bolt for the door. And some people say, you know, they don't want to talk to anyone. But we don't do this very often. And it's actually a very important part of a community like this, is they get to know each other. People can come for a long time here and not meet anyone or talk to anyone. And it's actually valuable to share a little bit of conversation with other people who are engaged in the same thing and have similar interests and involved in certain themes. So you're welcome to go, of course, but it's actually very, very supportive of people's ongoing involvement in practice to have some contact. And we do it so rarely that because we're usually so full, it's just hard to do. So what I'd like to ask you to do, so if you don't want to do that, you can just sit quietly and close your eyes and meditate, or you can leave. But it's, you know, but if you'd like to stay, it's nice to stay, it's supportive. Is what I'd like to suggest you do is you find two other people and form a little groups of threes. And then in your groups of threes, discuss something about what I talked about in terms of desire that was meaningful for you, that somehow was suggestive of you, or some new idea, or something that somehow seemed useful for you. Something about your relationship with this desire, and what was helpful about what I talked about, or what was not helpful. Share a little bit about your own personal response. And of course, you don't have to say anything that you don't want to say. This is not like true confessions. You only have to share what you're comfortable with sharing. So you'll have about 10 minutes. All three of you have kind of equal amount of time to talk. And one nice way of doing it is just kind of go around a few times, say a few things, next person say a few things, just go around and around, see where it goes. And then in 10 minutes we'll regather and have our last few words together as a group. Okay? Well, it sounded pretty lively. I suppose you had a few things to talk about. So one of the investigation of desire and respecting it, paying attention to it carefully and seeing what's going on. Another aspect of it is to understand who's in charge. Are you in charge or is the desire in charge? Even if it's a good desire, a helpful desire so-called, who's in charge? Do you have any choice or is there a sense of compulsion with it? Are you driven? And one of the beautiful things that's possible is to have, I don't know what the language is, but have a way of being where there's a feeling of clarity in the awareness, openness in the heart and the mind, or contentment or peace or calm or something, some of these qualities, that are strong enough that in that state, desires can arise. And there's no need to pick it up. And there's no way in which the desire by itself is going to push you around. The desire just floats. It's there. There's a desire. And then you can look at it and say, is this useful to act on or not? But the desire doesn't disturb your well-being or your peace. And one of the ways desires disturbs the well-being is when we get absorbed in the desire. It isn't just simply we get pushed around by it, but we get caught up in it, we get preoccupied by it. And it's a beautiful thing to have enough stability of mind, settledness, contentment, calm, or whatever, enough clarity of mindfulness that a desire arises, you see it clearly for what it is, there's no movement to automatically or habitually pick it up or get involved. There's a consideration or the seeing, is this, maybe this is useful, and then you act on it. Or there's a seeing and says, no, I don't need to do that now. So desire is a wonderful topic, and I hope that your little discussion was meaningful for you, and hearing other people, perhaps you got some different perspectives on this very important human quality. And I think it's probably a lifetime study to do this well, to understand your desire and your relationship to it. But I think it's a very rich one. And I would encourage you, especially if you're all inclined, to spend this week being a week where you investigate desire and look at more deeply what's the nature of desire, what are the different aspects of it. Try to ask the question whenever you have a desire, for what purpose do I have this desire? What's the underlying emotion of it? Or how many layers of underlying emotions might I find if I'm still and I watch? Who's in charge when I have it? What are the beliefs, what are the attitudes towards desire that I inherited from my family or from my society or my religion? What have I learned about desires in my lifetime so that some of the lessons have not been helpful and some have been? I know some people who've been burned too many times, so they don't trust their desires. I'm not going to act on anything anymore because, just too hard. Or it's all kinds of attitudes. So, and then as I started off the talk, there's some beautiful things that come through with desires. Desires represent, can hold some of the most beautiful qualities of human life in them as well. So, if you're at all inclined, spend the week on desire. And one of the ways to enhance it is if you can find somebody, another, if you know anybody, any other meditators, practitioners of any kind, religious people of any kind, friends, relatives, total strangers, that you could sit down with and say, this week I was given this assignment about desire. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about desire together and see what they have to say, what they've learned in their life. Okay, so thank you all.